Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Outcrew podcast, hosted by me, Luke Sonogy, and that, Harry Higginson.
That's me. Hello. How are we doing?
Doing good.
Good. Lovely to hear it.
Like we said last time, we're not going to do show and tell this time. We're going to do something else, but still similar, because we are going to talk about a record. We're going to talk about the record We Need You to Bleed by Flesh Creep, because the guest that you're about to hear talk about this record made the record. So, did you like it, Harry?
I thought this record was really good. It's exactly what I expected from the singles. It's a great bit of stompy, hardcore, kind of, as we mentioned in the episode later, in the vein of bands like Jell and bands like Spy. But there's something a little bit more metallic going on there as well. What did you think of it, Luke?
Well, I'm going to read my first bullet point. Fucking sick, really. Opening track, Gold, starts off with a reference to festive horror classic Black Christmas, with the call is coming from the inside. So I appreciated that. Lots of cool riffs the whole time. Very danceable. Just when I get up and throw some shapes, you know, pop some moves, boogie on down.
Nah, I thought this was great. And it's nice because it's, as we kind of mentioned later on in the interview, it's slightly different to a lot of UK hardcore. There's like, especially very mainstream UK hardcore, thinking bands like Malevolence, bands like Desolated, and even bands like Grove Street lean a lot more into the kind of riffy, bluesy, thrashy end of stuff. And whilst there are a couple of thrashy riffs that crop up on this Flesh Creep record, it's very stark and direct and stompy hardcore. That's something that we talk about a lot later on. It's very stompy, it's very downbeat heavy. The drums are absolutely killer. The riffs are really just aggressive and biting. Like, and the lyrics on this record are fantastic. I think that's worth commenting on. Tracks like Gold, yeah. Heads Will Roll, Like Dogs, False Flag, Insect Politics,
Turf War.
Yeah, Turf War. They're all very direct, covering everything from class war to transphobia and politics. It's a great political hardcore record. Really good fun.
Well, yeah, we talk about that in the chat with Tom quite a lot. We recorded that a few weeks ago before the album actually came out. So there's quite a bit of like timey-wimey stuff in this episode. it's gonna be like Tenet, but not shit.
I've not seen it. I can't comment. But I've not heard good things.
It's a Nolan film I absolutely hate. basically just bangs for 19 minutes. Like,
yeah,
go listen to it right now or in like an hour's time.
It's really short and to the point. And I do just want to say something that we both said just before we start recording. If anyone at home wants to just listen to one song off this album to get a taste for it, listen to False Flag. It, for me, Luke said before the call, it's got like a Metallica riff that comes in near the end, which is true. It's also got like, there's a vibe of like In Utero era Nirvana on it. It really reminds me of Tourette's by Nirvana, which is a massive compliment because it's my favourite Nirvana song. Just the, it's got like a squealy lead guitar riff and it's just great. So much fun. Another highlight is the interlude Yellow Tape, which is just a sample that builds really nicely into the next song, Video Nasty.
But I knew you were going to talk about the interlude because you like interludes, don't you?
Well, I like interludes if they've got something biting to say. A lot like another one of my favourites. It's not an interlude, but it's like the prelude to the songs Pay the Toll by Dead Heat and Hammer of Doubt by Power Trip. I love someone saying something dark or weird or slightly cryptic about politics and then just a nasty riff ripping through the end of the sample. But yeah.
We do love good use of samples. Sometimes they're a bit cringe, but like sometimes they like slap. My favourite sample is from the song Corporal Jigsaw Quandary by Carcass. And it's some woman talking about how to do like post-mortem investigations.
Mm-hmm.
She says, identifying the bodies which are decomposed, dismembered, skeletonized pose very serious problems. We've had many cases in this department where a body has been found in pieces or decomposed, and we've been able to put things together.
Jesus Christ, that is so rogue that you know it.
I don't know it. I was reading off my screen.
My actual favourite sample is off the song Gastrointestinal Industrial Complex by Lunar Blood. It opens with the classic line from Chicken Run. I don't want to be a pie. I don't like gravy. But yeah, enough about samples. I think we've got an episode to do.
Yeah, but before we do that, what are you bringing to show and tell next week?
Ah, glad you asked, because I almost forgot. The song I am bringing, or the album I am bringing for you to show and tell, is an album that we've spoken about a lot. You may have listened to it before, you may not have done. It's not in your regular wheelhouse. It is one of my favourite albums and one of the most influential albums of the 90s. It is The Shape of Punk to Come by Refused.
I know one song off it, because that song is used heavily in my favourite show, The Bear. But yeah, no, I'll peep the whole album.
And fun fact about Refused, when I saw them a couple of years ago, on the song Deadly Rhythm, they stopped halfway through because it has a riff that sounds quite a lot like a Slayer song. And so they stopped playing the song and started playing Raining Blood, and they did the first minute and a half of Raining Blood and then went back into the Deadly Rhythm. And it was one of the coolest covers of any song I've ever seen live. It was so sick. What have you got for me?
All right, the album I'm going to force you to listen to.
Oh, God.
It'll be fun and interesting.
Oh no.
It's an album that got shut on a lot when it came out before we were both born. But I feel like any fan of this band actually is more sensible now and can appreciate it for what it is. I'm not saying that every song on it is good, but there are a lot of good songs on it. It's Load by Metallica.
Okay, because I've heard that you're a bit of a Load and Reload apologist.
Well, not Reload. There's like two good songs off Reload and the rest is crap, but like,
okay.
I do stick up for Load though, because there is some real good stuff on that. But anyway.
So yeah, show and tell done as always. Flesh Creep album is a banger, go spin that. Think it's time to go into the episode, Luke.
Let's go into the episode. Now let's hear from the vocalist of Flesh Creep himself. It's my pleasure to introduce Tom Bienkowski to the Outcrew. How are you, Tom?
I'm very well, thank you.
Lovely. We're really, really glad to have you. Thanks for reaching out and getting in touch. I can say from now, even though at this point of recording we've only heard the singles, really looking forward to hearing what the full-length release is like. So we're going to start this episode the way that we start all of our episodes, by getting to know you a little bit better. So how did you first get into music and what drew you towards hardcore?
How I got into music is beyond me, to be honest. I didn't grow up in a very musical household. My dad listened to Paul Simon exclusively, but I can't even remember that we had a CD player or anything so it was definitely something I found myself. In terms of hardcore, I distinctly remember do you remember like Kazaa and Morpheus, like downloading programs or whatever? I accidentally downloaded Soulcraft by the Bad Brains, thinking it was probably like a fucking Linkin Park song or some shit. And it blew my mind, and as I say it was kind of, it was something cool and that I hadn't heard before. And I'm a super intense fanatic when it comes to anything that I get into. So as soon as I'd heard that, I was immediately like, what are other bands that sound like this? Like, who are their influences? Who are the bands that they've influenced? Like, and you know, I went down a rabbit hole that is, I'm still in to this day, thankfully.
So kind of, what have you been listening to lately? Have you been to like any gigs that you've caught lately that like stood out to you?
Gig wise, I find myself only like almost exclusively going to sort of local shows, that my friends' bands are playing or that my friends are putting on. I can't say I think of it as a difference between like, there's like a gig and a concert, do you know what I mean? And like, I haven't been to a concert. I haven't been anywhere with like a box office ticket booth that you have to like line up for and stuff. Yeah, in a long time. Last show I went to was at a place called Centrala in Birmingham, which is a wonderful venue that means a lot to myself and my band and everyone who is in the Birmingham hardcore scene. Shouts out to Centrala. Shouts out to Rich, who owns it. Lovely guy. That's a show I went to see was my friends in the band Slutmaid and my friends in the band Transistor and a band called Magnatus Court that I just caught for the first time, but were very good. Watch this space for all three of those. Especially, I know Transistor are working on some on a record, which from what I've heard, kills. They get better every time I see them, and they're the sweetest people in the world. I love them dearly. In terms of what music I've been listening to, honestly, there's a weird... I don't know if you guys ever get this, but like, because I'm like, you know, we play gigs fairly frequently and we're at practice every week and we're working on our own songs. I kind of occasionally get burnt out listening to hardcore and punk stuff all the time. So like, honestly, like I'm coming home and listening to like the Beatles and shit. Like, I'm very much trying to chill out when I'm in my personal space.
No, I absolutely get that. Like, I've been really hot on trying to listen to everything this year. I've been really trying to, like, diversify, kind of big and small, getting more into the UK scene, because I've a very US hardcore-focused taste.
Of course, yeah.
Kind of prior to this year, so I'm trying to spread out and listen to, because there's loads of good shit going on in the UK scene, yourselves included.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, it does just become like, oh my God, I can only handle so many riffs. So the album that I've been... like absolutely relying on just for a change of pace lately has been, I don't know whether you've heard it, the new Yard Act album.
I keep on seeing that name coming up, and I've been meaning to check it out.
It's really good fun. They used to be like a post-punk kind of band, but the new album is like, it leans way more into weirdly like disco.
Okay, yeah, cool.
And it's loads of fun. Like, it's really danceable. Like,
that sounds cool. As I say, like, I mean, I'm definitely the one certainly within my own band that, like, we'll probably go into this later, but in terms of like influences and stuff, like, you know, I like fucking Depeche Mode and shit. Like, I'm very much as much as I'm a dyed in the wool hardcore kid at heart. A lot of my, I don't know, there's so much good shit out there that I don't always necessarily... I'm not the guy that's 100% live for hardcore, die for hardcore type of shit, dude, so...
No, I absolutely get that. How did you first get into making music of your own, and how did you end up on vocals?
Well, two very different stories there. Making music on my own, I think I was given a guitar for Christmas or something when I was probably 13, maybe. I was just kind of getting into all of the popular bands of that time, which is perhaps regrettably the, you know, nu metal was big. I got a real like a beat up old Ibanez, I think it was, and like immediately trying to figure out my own tunes just made more sense to me than like learning other people's stuff. Like, I kind of did that to learn a little bit, but it never felt like there was much point in just memorizing a song that was already out. Like, it was far more fun to me to be creative and use it as a tool for songwriting. So I very much just learned sort of how to make songs by, I don't know, just listening to other people's songs and playing on a guitar and, you know, like, you piece it together. But, I've traditionally just played guitar for the most of my life, to be honest. Been in bands here and there, all of which I'm, you know, very proud of. But the vocal thing was always kind of in the back of my mind of something that, like, it's, like, the vocal's something that definitely stands out to me when I listen to music. And I've always been one for lyrics and kind of, you know, words. It was always like more of just perhaps a confidence thing and not really like being able to find my own voice. It was during lockdown where my other musical projects were kind of had slowed down. I was figuring out how to use GarageBand just to keep the juices flowing. And yeah, I kind of thought, well, why don't I try and make something that's easy enough to that I can teach other people how to play and loud enough that I can just sort of shout over it. The rest is history. I will say, initially, there was a lot of me in my little kind of cupboard in my old flat trying not to annoy my elderly neighbours. And then, yeah, like, one thing led to another. I kind of recruited some friends and we got into a practice room and let it rip. And I've honestly, not really touched the guitar much since. It feels very natural that I just consider myself a vocalist now, first and foremost.
You kind of said there, like, you're very kind of thoughtful about the words you put into the music that you make, and you're a lyricist, and we're going to go into that a little bit more detail later, because in transitioning from playing guitar in bands to being a vocalist, was that kind of more allowing, I don't know, your personal perspective, your emotions to drive the music you were making? Was that kind of what motivated that shift, or was it something else?
Yeah, no, certainly. I think there's an element to it where, I mean, I think that, like, I'm always someone that's, that can be, like, moved emotionally by a melody or whatever. And I still think that's very interesting how, you know, with guitar, like, whether it be melodically or texturally, you can create these sounds that can draw emotions out of people. Like, I think that's very cool, and like, it's something I hope to explore more within the basis of Flesh Creep in future. But sometimes, especially like given the state of the world, as I say, this is like in the, well, currently, but also when the pandemic was just starting and lockdowns were happening and stuff, like, you know, I was in a space where I just like, well, I have actual things to say that I don't want to be like abstract about them. Like, I want to be as direct as possible. So yeah, that certainly informed the initial Flesh Creep songs that were very, as I was trying to be as less flowery and poetic as possible and be as to the throat as I could be.
Yeah, it's definitely something that jumps out, like in your music, and it's something that we will come into in more detail later, because I'm really interested to pick your brains about that.
Pick away.
How would you describe Flesh Creep to the listeners at home?
I try not to say anything other than we're just a hardcore band. Like, I think you can get so bogged down in the particulars of which subgenre what belongs to, but I think it's fairly classic hardcore punk. If you like, you know, any of the staples of that genre, if you're into the Bad Brains, if you're into Minor Threat, if you're into Black Flag or the Dead Kennedys, I hope you would find something you'd like. I also think there's a current crop over the past couple of years of, as I say, sort of punk-inspired hardcore acts, like bands like Spy or Gel or yada yada, there's a million of them. I would like to think anyone who was into that could also find something they would like in my band. Funnily enough, none of the bands mentioned are necessarily direct influences in anything we do, but, you know, they're staples. So if you like that, you'll like us.
You mentioned Spy, Harry, when we were checking out Flesh Creep, didn't you?
Yeah, it's that stompy... it's, in my brain, it's filed under, like, stompy hardcore, where it's not... It's not like all out pace all the time, and it's not groovy in the way that, I don't know, bands like Buggin' are one of the bands that always crops up as like a groovy hardcore band. It's like quite straight, quite aggressive. But yeah, no, I think your sound really stands out, especially in the UK hardcore scene, especially the bigger bands hew a little bit closer to like metalcore, and across the spectrum of what metalcore could be, but like they skew towards metalcore, and I think it's nice that there is such a strong punk element, and you can hear so much of that stomp to it. Yeah,
certainly. I think there's that's kind of specifically something that's come from, I know we like, if you kind of go back to our very first release to the latest one, you can definitely hear, not that we're necessarily playing to the room in the regards to like adding mosh parts just so people mosh to them, but I think it's a natural thing to sort of gauge crowd reactions, and like there's you see what makes people move, and then you think like, okay, it just, as I say, it's not even like something we've like sat down and been like, yeah, let's write more stompy mosh parts, but they kind of just come out that way because, yeah, we get into a room and we kind of think about what moves us, and hopefully that moves other people.
You mentioned a little bit about this, but I'll just ask you the question explicitly. What are some of Flesh Creep's main musical inspirations, and what motivates the band to make music in the first place?
Ooh, that's a good one. I will say, as a whole, I always say that I think there's like the interesting thing about our band is that we have a broad range of influences that we don't allow ourselves to be too influenced by, if you'll allow me to elaborate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, across the board, like with there's members of my band that listen to really sludgy, like stoner, kind of like Nola shit. There's others of us that listen to super straight head punk stuff, you know, like old 70s, like Ramones type of 1, 2, 3, 4. Amongst many, many more. And I think they all kind of sort of meet in the middle a little bit to make our sound. And there's an element to it where, like I say, I know I have certain influences that if I were to be like let loose, I'm sure there would be Flesh Creep songs that would sound like, I don't know, XYZ band or, you know. However, I always kind of think, well, if I do that, I'm just going to make a poor version of whatever it is that I'm trying to rip off. So it's about meeting, but any band is just, you know, it's about the chemistry of four or five people and where all those tastes meet in the middle in a way that's satisfying to each of them. So yeah, I think there's like, and that's definitely like this, it, that takes some kind of reining in on your own ego that I think if I was younger and in older bands, I probably wouldn't have been able to do. But yeah, I think there's a level of restraint to what we do in the sense that like we're all kind of pulling in different directions and we know exactly how far to pull it in those directions without, you know, kind of leading it down a path that isn't going to result in the best Flesh Creep music, shall we say.
Yeah, I get you. I think on Spotify you've got some like influences playlists.
We do, yes.
Ooh, I didn't see
and
that.
I found those really interesting because there Thank was you. So little hardcore and there was so little like direct obvious influence. And I think we've had this when we've spoken to other artists from across the genre spectrum. Often it's come up that people have said, we try not to be influenced by bands that sound really anything like us. It will be something completely left field, or it will be visual art, or it will be film. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think especially as someone who has not really been in a band, I think that's quite interesting from a lay perspective, because you kind of assume that you would go into making heavy music with some kind of reference, like conscious reference point. But I do think it's interesting that that's something that you're trying to avoid.
I mean, yes and no. There's also a level where, like, you know, I am a fan of hardcore and metal and punk and mm-hmm. stuff, and like that stuff is in my blood. You know, as I say, like,
yeah,
like I've been there. As I say, when I got that guitar when I was 13 years old, trying to figure out how to play One by Metallica or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. And so yeah, like that stuff is it's. I always kind of feel like there's a weird level of, as I say, like some bands want to really tell you how, like, oh no, we don't even listen to hardcore or listen to metal or whatever. And I was just like, no, I do. Like, I put on fucking Slayer or shit and lose my head. Like, that shit's the greatest in the world. Like, I really deeply mm-hmm. am a fan, deep down in my heart, of the music that we do play. However, like I also said, I always think that I don't like stuff to be too genre, if you know what I mean. Like, I think like yeah. the interesting stuff is when you let other kind of elements of it bleed in, and hopefully mm-hmm. you're not playing just shit that's identical to the next band on the bill.
Have you got any other highlights from your time in Flesh Creep that you want to tell the listener about?
So, I mean, any gigs we've played at the aforementioned Centrale have been super close to our heart. Well, we played at Bolter Festival in Chepstow. That was bizarre. Somehow managed to pull a crowd, you know, like a dance music festival, which so we're playing there again this year. If anyone's listening who wants to go to Bolter to see some real out there wacky shit will be there as well. Nice. But honestly, I think that in terms of highlights, like, it always just comes down to being in a room with the four other guys in the band and making tunes. And, you know, like, I really think we have a very unique chemistry that's just kind of undeniable to us, at least. Like, I love those guys. I love spending time with them. I love making music with them. And, you know, it's one of those things. Like, sure, like, there's times when you could be, like, beating a song to death that's not quite working and everyone's pissed off at each other. And, you know, like, we're like any band, you know, we can have our off days. Mm-hmm. But when it comes together, there's something so exciting about it that's really just like no other emotion that I've ever felt in my life. And it really kind of like hits home the fact that I think I was kind of just put on this earth to be creative. You know, that's what I like doing, and that's what I get excited by. And there's no other outlet that I've found that allows me to do that in the same way as a Swesh group does.
The real highlights are the friends you made along the way.
That segues really quite nicely into the next group of questions, because when you reached out to us about coming on the pod, we had a little think about what we wanted to talk about, because obviously the Out Crew is kind of our mission statement is about underrepresented voices mm-hmm. in heavy music. And I think there's something that I really think I want to use this as a platform for, as much as representing people from marginalized groups, talking about kind of difficult and complicated topics and stuff that bands want to engage with and talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of, with Flesh Creep, you kind of told us that class struggle and that kind of class politics is an especially kind of strong theme that kind of drives your music and the lyrical focus of the band. So just kind of a general opener in talking about that, where did that focus come from, and kind of how have your experiences fed into that focus?
Well, so I'll start off by saying I'd like to acknowledge certain privileges that I've had, in the sense that I'm by no means had a kind of, I had a pretty comfortable childhood. Nothing special, but, you know, like, my parents had nice jobs, and, you know, that we didn't want for much. Like, I certainly had a better upbringing than they did. I managed to kind of capitalize on a very brief window in the 80s when social mobility was still a thing. So yeah, I don't want to appropriate anyone's voice. I'm not kind of speaking for the working class. I'm not even speaking for the other four members of my band.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, I engage in the workforce every week.
Mm-hmm.
I've had plenty of jobs. I pay my bills. I've engaged in society in a way that I think it doesn't take a genius to work out that the kind of the nature of things is quite inherently manipulative and exploitative, specifically towards the lower working classes. And I always kind of, I think in terms of using punk and hardcore as a voice for talking about that, there's certain bands that I grew up listening to. Born Against is a perfect example. Very sort of very sort of sardonic, almost tongue-in-cheek, but highly politically motivated band. And stuff like that that just, you know, caused me to think about my surroundings and you know, allowed me to kind of explore other avenues and stuff. And again, I don't want to come in super negative or name names or anything, but I think there's a certain kind of subsection of punk or hardcore that is just not really elaborating that well on their politics. You know what I mean? Like, it's super easy to, you know, gel your hair up in a mohawk and say, fuck the government. But why? Like, tell me what you think about that, and you know, like, tell me why I should be, where should I be looking otherwise? And again, I don't want to say like, oh, that's what we're doing, and like, I'm some kind of leader. But what I'm hoping to display with my lyrics in the band is just how I feel about things. I try and be conscious of, as I say, talking about stuff that I think is either not really discussed in other bands that I'm hearing, or interesting in a way to me. And trying to, yeah, lay out a bit of a map of sort of, this is why this is bad. In a very layman's terms, I think I think it's important that you kind of show your working out and really elaborate on what is wrong with society, or long story short, with my band, it's capitalism that's the problem. And I try and be as direct about that as I can be in 2 or 3 minute fast punk songs.
Yeah, that is certainly something that I found really impactful. I mean, I gave a little listen to kind of your whole back catalogue over the last couple of days, and especially on that first EP. And I don't know the full lyrics of the new record quite yet. So I'm sure it will crop up again. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple of tracks that really jumped out to me as to how explicit and how direct they were. So songs like With Impunity and Secret Wars are like really clear, explicit lyrics about the connections between kind of state violence, capitalism and imperialism. And I've asked this question of a couple of other bands with very directly political lyrics before, because I think it's just interesting to hear like what that expression is, what you want to do through that expression. Is it kind of a call to action to organize and think about these things more? Is it just prompting listeners straight up to think about it, or is it kind of an expression of your own frustrations and your own kind of turmoil about knowing, for instance, the way that United Fruit and Chiquita fucked over Central America, which is kind of what comes through in Secret Wars?
I mean, it's a little bit of both, to be honest. As I say, while I'm sure there are there are probably better ways of rallying the troops than screaming at them in small rooms, playing loud hardcore music. However, certainly, if you have heard one of our songs and you want to, as I say, question, you hit the nail on the head, as I say, with state violence, with impunity, or in Secret Wars, as I say, I kind of talk about imperialism. And honestly, there's a personal level to both of them as well, though. I spent a lot of time in Cambodia in my life. I have an uncle that lives there. And I've seen, like, firsthand, you know, the victims of a, like, mass US bombing of that country. I have shaken hands with one too many people that don't have fingers enough to leave a real fucking sour taste in my mouth. And I think there's a level to that type of thing where, as I say, you can have your kind of political beliefs and it's all like, you know, it can all be quote unquote armchair activism. But when you see that and you know, it becomes, it's no longer abstract, it's real and it's in your face and it's there. It's really just fucking hard to go back to just living your life like normal. If you know, and especially in an age now that we're living in of obviously real ready access to a lot of stuff via the internet, and you can kind of see very on the ground footage of conflicts and tragedies that are happening in real time. It's getting harder to just sort of switch off and watch whatever reality TV show's on. I think again, as I say, like, I'm not responsible for anyone else kind of finding their personal politics, but if I can be informative to them through my own personal expression, then I'd be very happy with that.
Just for the listener at home, because I kind of breezed past it when I was asking the question. If you don't know what the US did in Guatemala specifically, but also Central America, mm-hmm. please Google the history of the United Fruit Company. It is some of the most fucked up shit in the world, and the phrase Banana Republic is very literal.
Yeah.
A banana company essentially ran several countries in the in Central America through violence and force and conditions bordering on slave labor. Anyway, thank you for sharing that. I think that's like your personal experience in Cambodia. I mean, Luke and I, we went to the pub on the weekend, and we literally, because one of our mates has just been in Southeast Asia relatively recently, and we got on to talking about that and the material experience of those conflicts, even if it is in visiting family or in tourism or for work, like for whatever reason, I think it really confronts kind of stuff that we often see as far away and abstract from us, like in the global north, in our, for instance, my relatively like well-off middle class background, you see it through a screen. It's not presented to you materially, and so you can kind of abstract it away. And I think something that I think is really cool about Flesh Creep's music is the way that you go at being so direct, and there is very little poetry around the things that you're saying, and I do not mean that in a derogatory way. I mean that in like a you're really direct. I think that conveys what, or goes some way to conveying what is often kind of obscured by physical distance and the kind of abstraction of media.
Sure.
I just kind of wanted to cycle back on class for a second, because I think writing about class struggle in the UK is really interesting. I see class in the UK as our most profound social division.
Certainly.
But also the one that's kind of like invisible to us. When you're writing lyrics about class struggle, how do you get about communicating that? And I haven't personally seen Flesh Creep live either. Is that something that you broach directly between songs, or is that something you let the music speak for itself?
And I certainly had a... I had a habit of introducing one of our older tracks as being about my job that makes me want to kill myself. which lays it out right there. Like, I have a job and I have to get up at 5 a.m. in the morning and I have to drag myself out of bed to break my back in order to make someone else a ton of money. Like, I work in a factory, so it's as Dickensian as you can imagine. I think anyone in the workforce in England surely must be able to, that level of class consciousness is, it's beyond me that people like don't seem to kind of understand the effect, because it's not, as I say, it's not particularly obscured. It's you come in and we own you for 8 hours of the day, and there's a song on our new record, which is called We Need You to Bleed. There's a song called Bleed Out, which I guess is the title track, sort of, that I wrote in, honestly, like a matter of 10 minutes after I witnessed like a manager at the Fracture I work just chew someone out in front of everyone for a minor mistake. And it made me, it really like upset me, because I thought like, it's not enough that this kid has pulled himself out of bed and gotten a bus and walked in the rain to come and work for fucking, you know, minimum wage in this fucking horrible conditions of this factory. Not only is that what you're asking of him, you also have to dehumanize him in front of everyone. Like, he has to be just, you know, the fact that you get paid £2 more an hour means you can speak to him like a child who's, you know, be naughty or whatever. And it as I say, the evidence is all there. Like, you don't have to be you don't have to be a scholar, you don't have to know your theory. Like, you can just see it play out directly in front of you that certain people are viewed as less in society. And it's most of us.
Yeah, I guess my big moment for that was I went to state school in West London. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really, I mean, West London is very multicultural.
Mm-hmm.
It's state school, so there's no one there that's really like rich or hits or anything. But mm-hmm. then I went to University of Exeter, and in my first year accommodation, I was the only one there in my flat of about 8 or 9 people that hadn't gone to private school. And out of those 8 flatmates who went to private school, 6 of them went to boarding school.
Yeah.
And I was the only one that had just finished my A-levels. Everyone else had been all around the world for a year, getting their picture taken with drugged up tigers.
Yeah. That's, I know the type. And like, as you say, like those people, they're kind of, their path is sort of set for them because, as I say, the sort of social mobility is something that's a lot more accessible to people of a certain class than it is the lower end of society. It's really, even just, like, I'm kind of an idiot in many respects. I feel like kind of like a man-child at some point. Like, I've just bought a house with my wife, and there's so much stuff about just, like, interest rates and mortgages and stuff that I'm really kind of just figuring out now as a 35-year-old man. But like, even just the idea of just kind of like how much a leg up can really just change your whole, like, you know, if there's certain things that even if it's just the safety blanket of knowing that if everything fucks up, you've got something to fall back on, whether that be your parents or some investments or, you know, savings or whatever. 99% of the country don't have access to that. And if there's the very real threat of, I mean, I can't remember the exact saying, but it's kind of people say about, like, you're only ever 3 months away from being being homeless, whereas you're certainly not 3 months away from being a billionaire.
And I think that instability and that precarity, like, not trying to grandstand or like do a political lecture, but that instability and that insecurity is a core part of how, especially in the UK, like, you are made to do a job. You are made to do a shit-eating job that you don't want to do because the state has whittled away what support there should be, right? In any kind of just society, you should be able to have 3 bad months and not end up on the street. There should be a social safety net. I mean, fuck's sake, we're one of the richest countries on the planet.
And a lot
of that wealth is ill-gotten, right?
Of course, is
built on blood, but there is no way that even with the money flowing back the other way that it very deservedly should be, to fucking pay our debts of empire, that we should not be able to take care of anyone in our society.
You know, it's funny you say that about the kind of blood of empire. There's a one of our older tracks. I suppose it's in terms of, it's actually pretty recent. We have a song called King of the Hill, which sort of is kind of about what you're saying just there, in the sense that, like, I remember, I can't remember what it was. There was some tragedy or other, which sounds very kind of flippant about these things, but God knows there's been a lot for the past couple of years. And I saw someone commenting on it saying about, like, oh, you know, makes you think you're lucky to have what you have here in, you know, lovely England. And it just struck me as a really odd way of putting it, because, like you say, like, There's an element to it where it's perhaps not as simple as this, but like almost everything that we have is, as I say, yeah, it's been taken from the global south, and it's been, all of the luxuries that we're afforded come at a price. And it just seems very odd to me to think of it as being lucky, like, in a way that, like, sure, yeah, like, it, you could describe it as being lucky, but it's almost like, oh, I'm lucky that my guys exploited the whole other, everyone else in the planet, and came out the victors. It just seems a very sort of, I don't know, interesting way of viewing that. And again, I'm sure it was just a throwaway comment, but we're not really, certainly, you know, in our education system or with our news media, really ever taught to unpack the history of, as I say, kind of imperialism, or even, like you say, as class within our country. Like, it's, as you mentioned before, lots of it's just geared up to kind of toe the line. Sorry, I'm rambling here.
That's all right.
You get my point.
Nah, let's do something more optimistic now, Luke. Go on.
Right, yeah. So the biggest news from the Flesh Creek camp recently is that you've completed your debut full length, which is yet to release at the time of recording this, but out now for anyone listening. Future Luke and Harry gave their thoughts at the start of the episode, which you'll have heard by now. How would you, Tom, sell the record to the listeners at home?
I would sell it as... That's a difficult one. It's 10 hardcore songs played in a row for 20 or so minutes. No, it's absolutely the culmination of everything we've done previously. I think we've trimmed a lot of the fat as well as elaborated on our sound in many ways. I think it's some of the most kind of insightful writing from all of them. I cannot begin to tell you about how proud and in awe I am of everyone in my band. I think everyone is firing on all cylinders. Every single member has a song, at least one song that they, you know, were the sole, not sole contributors to, but like, you know, main songwriter of. It's such a sort of time capsule of a period in our lives, and it just sounds like my friends, it's a very profound and emotional experience listening to it for me. But I think for anyone that doesn't personally know my band, it's five dudes giving it their all and trying to make something that hopefully will be worth listening to in a year's time, to 5 years' time, to 10 years' time, maybe, hopefully forever. As I say, and that's difficult in the very, as we've talked about, very kind of oversaturated world of hardcore. There was something always in the back of our minds where we thought, do we want to make a, you know, passable cookie cutter kind of hardcore record that maybe some of our friends might want to mosh to, or do we want to make something that at least to us feels timeless, like, you know, something that you can kind of show the grandkids.
Have you got any particular memories from making the new record that you'd like to share with us here?
Oh, God. Lots. It's funny, I've been telling people, the writing was never particularly stressful. Like, it just kind of flowed out of us. We wrote most of it in the space of probably about 2 months, just really hammering it out every single day. The actual organization of it could get a bit hairy sometimes. I'll tell you one. So our drummer, Dan, who has, he's still kind of in the ranks, but he's moved to Finland recently. So we have a new drummer called Jim, but Dan's very much still a part of the Flesh Creep family. He was moving to Finland like while we were recording this record, and at one point dropped his kid off at the airport, drove, I think it was Stansted Airport, so it's a good like couple hours back to Birmingham, or Wolverhampton, which is where we recorded with our good friend Thomas. If you're listening, Tom, love you. He drove back to Wolverhampton. The flight was at like 5 in the morning. He drove back for like 10 or something and literally just recorded all the drums in about 3 or 4 hours. and we booked him 2 days and we said, you know, take your time. You know, you might be kind of pooped from such a physically and emotionally stressful morning. He came in. Before I'd even woken up, I'd got a text message being like, yeah, we're done. there's lots of that kind of, lots of it was sort of us racing against the clock, doing things at the last minute, really kind of, yeah, sort of banding it together to get things done in a way that I think gives the record level of urgency that I think hopefully translates to the listener.
Now let's look forward to the future. Do you have any upcoming live shows booked in that you're excited to play?
Absolutely. As I say, I'm not sure when this will air, so these may have already happened.
Early April.
Early April. So we will have just got back from our first European run with nice. Corrupt Vision from the States.
Nice. How did it go?
Hopefully good. I think organizing a tour in a DIY capacity is stressful and often mm-hmm. feels like it could all fall apart at any moment, but we're all feeling good by the time this is out. I'm sure it will have been a blast regardless. But past that, I think, what have we got? May, we have Balta Festival, which I mentioned earlier. There was it's a sort of mix, sort of dance, all sorts festival. It's Balter. I don't know, who was on, we played last year and it was us and then the fucking Wurzels was on.
Oh, nice.
and Goldie Looking Chain played. This year's it's Andy C's headlining and...
Yeah, Corrupt FM headlining.
Corrupt FM, yeah. I'm sure the year before it was the Venga Boys. It was Squarepusher and the Venga Boys. and then, they have this little tent, a Phlegmgasm, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, where they put on punk and hardcore shows. And it kicked off when we went. It was really super fun. Again, the first time we've ever played a sort of outdoor festival type of thing, and it was just a blast. I kind of grew up, going to sketchy, semi-legal / illegal raves and shit. Mm-hmm. So that kind of culture feels very close to home to me. But yeah, super fun. I think that same weekend we're playing with World Peace from the States. Nice. In London. Which should be very, very fun. Then we've just got, a smattering of shows here and there. I think, where are we playing? We're playing in Warrington. We're playing in... I'm not sure how many of these are actually confirmed or announced. So I don't want to kind of say, we're playing here, and then I get an email being like, yo, you fucking... You weren't supposed to tell them. Mm-hmm. we're always happy to sort of get out and about and play new places. We don't ever want to be that band that's just, plays in Birmingham every other week. Because I feel like most people in Birmingham that would like us have probably had the opportunity by now. it's always fun getting to go and experience new places, meet new people, play cool shows. We're always rambling about. I tell you, I have a fun story of going back to Balta, actually. So the tent that we were playing on, next to it there was what I can only describe as a kind of sort of gender fluid strip club kind of mm-hmm. situation. I did not venture inside, but it was a small gazebo that had a sign outside saying, with a list of rules of how to kind of play nicely in this place. It seemed very very alluring if you're into that type of thing. But so some of the dancers came out during our set completely naked. I remember there being a woman wearing head to toe. Green body paint and just, as I say, full nude. And that type of shit's really distracting when you're trying to remember the lines to you. So, I remember just kind of having a moment to just be like, surely that's not fair.
The old saying of if you're nervous, just picture the audience naked probably works less well when it's actually happening.
I was going to say, for sure. as I say, it was that's the kind of thing that was that place is full of just freaky shit happening at every corner, and that's kind of I'm into that type of shit, I felt like a kid in a candy store, so to speak, of just bizarre odd shit going on all around me.
Nice. Are there any kind of bands or artists that you want to give a shout out to, kind of from either your local scene or beyond, just anyone you're really fucking with at the moment?
I mean, too many to even say, but I'll kind of try and keep it local just to so that I don't, you know, list every band in the country. Mm-hmm. My best friends in Slutmade, I love them to death, musically and personally. Shout out to all those guys if you're listening. Our bass player plays in another band called Mold, who are really hitting it hard at the moment, really doing cool things. Super proud of them. Sweetest guys in the world. Love them. Then there's my friends in the band Nerve Agent. They're sick. They're coming out with a new record that should be, I think, out by the time this comes out. Check them out. Thrashy crossover stuff. Really cool. Certain members of that band are also in a band called Dead Slow, who have been around for a minute. They're great. Love them. Transistor. I already talked about Transistor at the front of the episode, but yeah. Wonderful people. I've loved them to death. And their band, I just saw them the other day and they fucking ripped like so hard. Like, again, like a band that I've seen from their kind of infancy, and now I've had the pleasure of seeing multiple times, and they just, you know, when you can kind of see a band really just lock into their own sound and their own vibe, and it's been really like, I feel very grateful to be able to witness their kind of their journey. I'm going to stop there just because if any bands I've missed listening to this, I'm sorry. You know I love you all. But yeah, that's a handful of the excellent stuff we have going on in Birmingham right now, as I say.
That's cool. If everyone gets a shout out and no one gets a shout out.
Exactly.
So before you finish up, is there anything else you would like to say or plug?
I think in the interest of, as I say, we briefly kind of touched on the politics of the band and of the world at large. I think I would be remiss to not, using whatever public platform I have, whether it be my band or a podcast, to call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. I will say free Palestine with my chest. I will say it every day until it happens. My heart is with everyone in Gaza right now. I don't have the words for the horrific genocide that is currently unfolding before our eyes, and there's really nothing in recent memory that to me has had such an outcry from the public and been met with like such a staunch no, fuck you from the powers that be. It's super disheartening, even for, you know, us in the sort of the West, and, you know, like, as I say, the kings of the castle. It's fucking hard to see democracy just ignored in such a blatant manner. I can't even begin to imagine how much it'd be for the people who are currently experiencing a very active ethnic cleansing in Palestine. So yeah, that's all I can say on that matter. But yeah, ceasefire now, free Palestine.
Yep, free Palestine. Also, I'd also want to add, J.K. Rowling gave £70,000 to anti-trans campaigners recently.
If you think
you can watch your wizard films and read your wizard books, that's what. If you want to know where your money's going, and if you care where your money's going.
You know, that's exactly what our latest, the last single we put out, Turf War. I don't know if you could read between the lines of what that might be referring to. It's very much about...
That's what made me think of it.
Yeah, it's very much about J.K. Rowling. Or just any of the like, there's a real sort of bizarre trend of the kind of celeb turfs, and again, I'm not this kind of the person who should be the voice of trans struggles. I have many wonderful friends in that community that are, you know, absolutely able to speak for themselves, but I like to, you know, support them and be an ally in any way I can. And I just think there's something so fucking bizarre about, like you say, like J.K. Rowling is the author of one of the most commercially and critically successful book series of all time. She sits atop a media empire that's probably worth billions. In the same sense, someone like Graham Linehan, am I pronouncing that right?
Linehan.
Has written some of the most beloved TV our country has ever known. Dave Chappelle is one of the greatest stand-ups of all time. These are successful people who have money and wealth and adoring fans, and under every criteria, they should be satisfied with their lives. And for some reason, the existence of trans people just happens to kind of break that, find a kind of crack in the woodwork there that's just, they can't stop themselves. And I just, it's, you know, just, it's just beyond me. Like, just retire. You know what I mean? You have millions and millions of dollars or pounds or whatever. Like, you can just go live on an island. You can fuck off and just like live in peace. What possibly could drive you to spend all of your time making trans people feel bad about themselves? It's fucking crazy to me. Yeah, so fuck all of those people.
Fuck them. Stop listening to them. Stop buying their books. Do something else. There's way better shit out there that won't make you feel existentially horrible about what you're supporting.
For sure.
And on that wonderfully positive note, I think, unfortunately, that is all we have time for. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been... a blast. I've had a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for coming on, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
Wicked.
Listener at home, go listen to Flesh Creep. They're fucking great.
Yeah, we need you to bleed out soon.
Yes, it will be out by the time you're hearing this, so go and give it a spin. Anything else to add?
I think I've kind of said everything I have.
Thank you for listening. See you in a bit.
Pleasure speaking to you.